That means we're on the record.
On the air. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for coming to this special meeting of the Attorney General's Public Records Reform Task Force. I am the Attorney General, Ellen Rosenblum, and I'm really excited that you're here to talk to and share with the members of our group your thoughts about the Oregon public records laws. Since the purpose of this afternoon and evening is to hear from you, I will try to be brief, but I thought it might be useful to give you a quick synopsis of what the task force has been working on so far, in case that might help to inform comments this evening. So Oregon's public records disclosure law was enacted in 1973 to ensure that Oregonians could know what their government is doing. Sunshine laws were a popular response to Watergate and similar scandals. In the 40-plus years since then, Oregon's public records law has actually changed very little, except that while there were initially 55 laws stating that certain records are not available for public disclosure, there are now more than 500. At the same time, the way in which government entities do business has changed drastically. Most importantly, email, as we know, is now everywhere, and it's sort of the way of doing business. Once upon a time, public officials would make a call or set up a meeting more informally, but email is now a common substitute for that. And if something was really important, of course, it would be written down, perhaps in a letter or memo. But now, much of that sort of simple back and forth type of communication has been replaced with, for the most part, with email correspondence. This is not necessarily a bad thing, but the reality is that 1970s provisions governing the cost and the timing of public records responses work poorly in the 21st century workplace, especially when combined with the explosion of new laws designating categories of records that are exempt from disclosure. The last 25 years, there have been two major efforts to update and improve the public records law. Both were unsuccessful, and I know that getting meaningful change in this area of law may be a difficult struggle. But the importance of effective and meaningful transparency laws has been demonstrated again and again in many of the most high-profile issues that have affected our state. Public records disclosures, some of them ordered by my office, have contributed meaningfully to public discussions about such things as the transportation of Bakken crude oil through Oregon, the practices of pesticide spraying in our state, and the public employees' retirement system, just to name a few. On the other hand, there have also been some very high-profile occasions when the perception that government is hiding things has fostered a rift in Oregonians' trust of government institutions. I convened this task force because I believe that it is past time to fix our creaking public records law. We need to make it simpler and more effective for Oregonians who want to know what their government is up to. In doing that, I recognize that there really are circumstances in which the public's right to know must be balanced against other important considerations. But I do not believe that we need hundreds and hundreds of sometimes inconsistent exemptions. And while some flexibility is needed to ensure that our government agencies can continue to get their work done, that flexibility should not make it possible for public bodies to frustrate straightforward requests with excessive fees and long delays. In short, I believe that with hard work, we can craft a law or changes in the current law that works far better for Oregonians. And so with that, I'm going to turn this meeting over to my special counsel, Michael Krohn, who has been leading this task force and doing an excellent job, I might add. And he's going to invite those of you who signed up to come forward and share your thoughts. And we're also available to answer some questions, since obviously we have time. We don't have a huge number yet. We expect probably more people to show up during the course of our two scheduled hours. So, Michael, with that.
Thank you, Attorney General. I want to start, I think, by just introducing myself and then letting the members of the task force have an opportunity to introduce themselves. I think given the number of people in the audience, I'm probably not going to have to go off the sign-up sheet at this point, so probably just invite people to kind of form an orderly queue to give their statements. I also have one statement that I'll read that was emailed to me by a member of the public who asked that I read it on her behalf because she was unable to attend. My name is the Attorney General said is Michael Crone. I'm special counsel for legal matters in her office, and I've been very interested in government transparency laws since I started working at DOJ in 2007. I desperately hope that we can actually improve this law. I think it's necessary to foster public trust, and I think, frankly, that it's necessary for our public bodies to be able to effectively do their work while also being accessible to people. Representative Huffman, would you like?
John Huffman, State Representative for House District 59. I live in the Dalles, and my district goes from the Dalles to Fossil to Sisters to all of northern Deschutes County, so a pretty far-flung rural district. And so happy to be a member of the task force. If I come with any bias at all, and I don't particularly think I do, but I should divulge that I spent 22 years in the broadcast industry. And so if I err on something, it's probably going to be err on the side of public records should be available to the public.
My name is Jeb Ledeen. I'm publisher of the News Register in McMinnville, a family-owned newspaper. I do have a bias. I represent the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association on the task force, and I guess if I have a bias, it would be that over 40 years ago, when I was a young editor of a community newspaper, they were writing this law, and I was working long days and going home and watching replays of the Watergate hearings overnight. So it's sort of started early with a high interest in the Oregon law and its application here in the state and how it played out across the country. I'm happy to be part of the task force.
Thank you. Robert?
I'm Robert Taylor. I'm the Deputy Secretary of State. I work for Secretary of State Gene Atkins. We oversee the audits division that did a public record audit late last year now. And also we oversee the archives division that has a role in the public records area.
My name
is
Betty Reynolds. I'm a public member of the task force. I expressed an interest in this work after 11 years as director of the Ethics Commission, and so I'm interested in that, the public access aspect. My doctorate's in public administration of policy, and so I'm very interested in the policy, public policy aspect. And then finally, I'm president-elect Oregon School Boards Association. I'm also interested in the administrative workability of the public records laws.
I think with that, I would just ask, starting maybe in the front row, if you're here to speak to the task force, please come forward if you can. And
approximately how long you have.
Yeah. Introduce yourself, and maybe if you could keep your comments 5 minutes or so.
Sure thing.
Have a big crowd, but.
My name is Susan Hansen. I'm a rural resident of Clackamas County near the city of Mallala. I participated back with Attorney General Kroger's work. I would say that given the turnout today compared to that, I think you maybe need to do better outreach on this issue and consider regional center outreach, go among various areas of the state and gather information. I participated in one in Salem that was very well attended when Attorney General Kroger was doing the work. I've done lots of public information requests since 2007 when I got involved in all kinds of land use, environmental, and community issues. I've petitioned to a variety of agencies, including DEQ, Department of Agriculture, county, city, other agencies. I find people are all over the map in their responses and their charges for public information. Some are highly respectful. I have a small environmental nonprofit. If you ask for a waiver, places like DEQ and DLCD are likely to grant it to you, but other places are very, I think, unfair about that. So I think there needs to be high respect for especially nonprofits who are trying to gather information and do good work. Waivers are, I think, especially important. I find that all over the map also, is the problem of small towns like the town of Moala that I have done a lot of public information requests to. They are constantly trying to restrict access via huge charges and or records that should be maintained that they claim they do not have. I was quoted something like $800 to look at a less than 10-year-old annexation record that they said I have to make the deposit, but they might not even be able to find it, and it could cost a lot more searching through dusty boxes. That is supposed to be a permanent record, so I think these places need to be highly aware of what is legally a permanent record and that the clerks in these areas need to be trained to maintain those records and respect it, because I cross-checked with other little towns near me, Silverton and Canby. They would have just had a file for something like that and put it out on the counter. Of course, I did not spend $800 to try to obtain that file. Now the other ploy is to charge huge legal fees to stop people from examining records. We had a forced annexation issue. I asked to see who'd been notified for the land use hearing and was told it would cost over $1,000 for me to see that list, that they would have to run it by, this is Moala, their legal staff to see if anything has to be redacted. That is a constant throwback to stop you from seeing things. So I think there has to be some kind of consequences about those kinds of behaviors. The access to records that are all now on computers, sometimes the charge issue comes up that it has to be printed out and then there'll be copy fees and staff time. I think you need to have, like I believe the federal government has in some cases, public access computers so agencies and cities can put this needed information on a computer, and those of us who want to save fees can just say, hey, we want to look at this, and so we'll come in and see it at the office. And so that's something I think you really need to consider, because we can't pay for endless staff time, especially in places that are not so well managed and don't have very, you know, they're all over the map with the charges. Again, I think there need to be consequences for violating public records access that's universal across the state. I've had to petition our county attorney in several cases for the local school district and the city. The county isn't even very aware of, you know, what to do or how to handle it. They're not happy about having to handle that kind of request, and I don't blame them. It should be a very simple thing to provide clear public information. So again, you need clear and concise rules about what is public information, and it must be as open as possible. I commend you for trying to open as many records as possible. I think you need to have targeted training for especially small cities, but probably everyone, agencies too, about what is public records, what needs to be maintained, and how you treat the public when they request these records. And then I think there needs to be a way in place for statewide for us to appeal and contest when we are denied access, especially via unfair charges in the public records realm. So thank you for listening, and again, I've had a lot of experience, and it's extremely frustrating for the public who wants to know how our business, we're paying for all of this, and to have anyone deny us access to simple information is offensive.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see, the next row. Do you like to come over, sir?
I'm not here to provide comment, okay. But I thought I'd introduce myself briefly. I'm Jesse O'Brien. I'm the policy director with OSPR, the statewide public interest advocacy group, and I'm here pinch hitting for my boss, David Rosenfeld, who's a member of the committee. And I'm just here to listen tonight.
You're welcome to come and sit with us if you'd like.
Well,
okay. Well, thanks for being here. Great.
Ms. Gurney?
Do you want me to introduce or attempt
to? You both. Introduce yourself.
Okay. My name is Anne Marie. I'm the state coordinator for the Freedom Foundation. I do have handouts, if that's appropriate, and there's three copies, so if everyone takes the top three, it should be fine. I'm here to talk about the difference between public interest and special interest in regards to the public records law. Again, for the record, my name is Anne Marie Gurney. I am the Oregon coordinator for the Freedom Foundation. And I'm going to tell you a little bit of this story behind the articles. These were recently printed in the Oregonian. In December of 2014, I did a public records request to DHS asking for the names and addresses of all home health care workers in the state of Oregon. At the time, that was public records, and it should have been given to me. There's consensus among DHS and others that that was public information. The person who handled that public records request was Gene Evans, who is the public relations officer for DHS, and he fully admits that he worked without my knowledge, to work with the legislature to get that information exempted. I appealed that decision, and it was denied. The fix to that was the first bill that passed was House Bill 3037, exempted the information I asked for. The fix to that, and it's interesting, I had a conversation with Mr. Crone, at the last meeting, and you had said House Bill 3557 is the fix to that. It's how you can get that sort of information, and the state will pay for your stamp. And I did a subsequent public records request asking for one person's name and address, the home health care worker. And I just got the response from Gene Evans again. Pursuant of House Bill 3557, we mailed a copy of your public records request to this person on December 14th. So the state paid for my stamp. We considered all information submitted under House Bill 3557, consulted with our attorneys at the Oregon Department of Justice, and we have determined that you have not demonstrated by clear and convincing evidence that the public interest requires disclosure. DHS therefore denies your request. I have to go back and jump back to House Bill 3557 that was supposed to be the fix. You need to provide clear and convincing evidence. Home health care workers under a new Supreme Court decision have the right to 100% opt out of their union membership, and we want to let those workers know that. I need their names and addresses to do that. So, and not only that, that information, at the time I requested, it was public information. It should have been given it to me immediately. It should not have been stalled. It should not have been held back from me. I then used the mechanism that's supposed to be the fix to that. And if newly found constitutional rights are not clear and convincing evidence to disclose a record, I don't know what is. So I am frustrated by this kind of process of, there's a public records request. Somebody doesn't want that disclosed, some public special interest group, and they do this end around to make it so that somebody can't get what's a public record. And as I look at the exemption list, that's kind of the flavor that I get. I see special interest groups have gotten their little special piece of information that they hold special exempted. I think we need to take some best practices from other states that have a very clear and concise and simple guidelines for exemptions. And I understand that there needs to be exemptions. I understand that personal addresses may even need to be exempted. But when somebody presents clear and compelling evidence and follows the rules that were made after I asked for them, there needs to be a mechanism for that. And there needs to even be a mechanism to stop special interests from kind of one-upping this legislative background situation. So I come to you, and I know that I don't know very many people in this room, but I know we may differ on how you think about unions and union membership, and I know that politically. But borrowing from the Public Records Handbook, I think a really interesting paragraph that the Attorney General put in there, the identity, motive, and need of the person requesting access to public records are irrelevant. Interested persons, news media representatives, business people seeking access for personal gain, persons seeking to embarrass government agencies, and scientific research all stand on equal footing. So whether you agree with what I want to do with that information or not, it's irrelevant. I asked for the information, and somebody snuck behind my back and has continued to hide it from me, and that is wrong. We need to find mechanisms that fix that. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Did you get the names?
You got the names. That's all we got.
Yes. Mr. Allen?
Good afternoon. My name is Morgan Allen. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon School Boards Association, and I generally volunteer to work on public records for school districts and education service districts across Oregon. We have a 197 school districts and 19 ESDs, and that's kind of one of the first things I wanted to present to the committee for consideration is that we have school districts like Portland Public Schools or Salem-Keizer with, you know, 40, 50,000 students, full-time professional public relations, media, communication staff. We also have, of those 197 school districts, about 20 that have fewer than 100 students and maybe only have a handful of employees. And certainly they don't have a professional person or attorneys or communication staff that deal with public records requests. So as you're considering the rules, you know, just consider that there are entities outside of state government, in local government and school districts that oftentimes don't have the expertise or professional staff to deal with ongoing public records requests. So just think about that. One of the other things I hope you guys think about too are timelines. I know that's been a big issue in the past and debated in some of the previous discussions about changing the rules. And there's a couple issues that we, from the school district perspective, hope you consider. And the first is, on timelines, is that school districts have different calendars than, let's say, a large state agency. We have summer vacations, Christmas vacations, spring break. We actually have, probably about 50 school districts across the state that have four-day school weeks. So when you start making hard and fast timelines that are, say, 10 business days from the time of request, we'd hope that you consider that some of the local government entities, they might not be open. I mean, this type of thing could happen if there's a hard and fast, say, 10-day to respond to a public records request. Well, if someone puts it in on the Friday before Christmas vacation starts, 10 business days are going to elapse when there's going to be no one at the school district office. So that's just one thing to consider, summer breaks and you know, again, school districts with four-day weeks. We're supportive of acknowledgement and receipt, that if you get a public records request, there should be a reasonable amount of time that you acknowledge it and let someone know that you've received it. But we do still have some concerns with putting hard and fast deadlines on all requests because, again, some can be very complicated, require attorney review. We deal with a lot of information with people that are minors, and there are other federal provisions, FERPA and other things, so we do have concerns about that. We would agree on the issue of charges, that most of these records should be free, especially in the electronics era, but there are legitimate times when you have to go into archives or hire outside people or attorneys to look at records. And we think there should be an opportunity for school districts to charge for those if it's reasonable. And one of the suggestions we might put forward is this idea, and I've seen this and read plenty of the articles where it looks like egregious, you know, there's a public body that is making an egregious charge or trying to stonewall. And that's we don't support those types of things. So perhaps a solution would be, I know there's been a discussion about having an ombudsperson or an office where perhaps citizens or organizations could challenge the charges with an impartial reviewer to see if they are actually legitimate, rather than just banning charges outright. You know, maybe having a third party, you know, mediate those or look at those as a possibility. Just a couple other things I want to mention on the record as you're continuing. Again, for school districts and education service districts, again, we're dealing with student data. We have a lot of federal privacy things, and we're dealing with data of minors, so just consider that when you're doing your work. We certainly support a review of the exemptions. It's probably past time for that. We would generally think fewer are better. And a couple other things to consider, you mentioned this, just a couple of people mentioned this, we want some clear guidance on electronics, and obviously this law was put in place before all of the data-driven technology we have, so we certainly would appreciate that. And the last point we'd like to make is if you make any changes to the public records law, want to make sure that there's some sort of cross-review by Michael or some other staff in your office to make sure that public meetings laws and records retention laws are consistent with those changes. So you kind of make sure that if you're changing the public, what's defined as a public record, that retention rules are updated, or what things we might have to record at school board meetings or keep a record at school board meetings is updated as well. So appreciate the time and look forward to working with you through the process.
Rob, would you like to introduce yourself? This is a late-coming member of our task force. We're probably going to have some people in and out as the 2 hours scheduled for this meeting.
Oh. I'm Rob Bavetta. I'm legal counsel for the Association of Oregon Counties. Yeah, some of the members are busy in the Capitol building because we're having I just got out of the marijuana committee.
The joint marijuana.
They still call it that, huh? Welcome, Rob. Thanks for coming.
Hi, I'm John Perry. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for EO Media Group. We have newspapers in Astoria, Seaside, Cannon Beach, Lincoln City, Pendleton, Hermiston, Enterprise, John Day, and we have the Capital Press here in Salem and the Capital Bureau. I hadn't come here today to testify, but I thought since Jeb is here as well, I could throw in a few thoughts from our company. I don't work on news side. I work on the business side, but I used to be a reporter for many decades. And what I deal with now is when an editor will call and say, I think we need to get our legal counsel involved in getting a record. Our legal counsel is Tonkin Torp, and that costs a lot of money, so I kind of play the arbiter in that role. Just a few things I want to pass on. First, I applaud that this group is looking at this issue, and I wish you more success than the first two times. Second, that you've compiled all the exemptions in one list is a great service, but you can't stop there. Just a few things. I would say that what you do really has to apply not only to the city of Portland and the state, but it does have to apply to the small school districts, the small cities. Whether they have expertise at that local level really should not be a determination. If the school board association wants to provide that kind of service to the smaller school districts, that certainly could be a thing that they could do. What we find a lot in the small towns is what I've heard before, a lot of the clerks and the mayor and all that, they're not aware of the law. And so they spend a lot of time talking with, their city attorney, talking among themselves. We spend a lot of time spinning our wheels, and it really seems like it should be a lot more clear-cut than it is. And so if this group could help that process along, it really shouldn't get down to, as it does in the media a lot, this is a record that is supposed to be public. We can't get our hands on it, and so then we start working our sources. Who's going to slip us this stuff? And that can work with the media. It doesn't always work with the citizenry, and it really shouldn't come down to that. I think technology is one of the big barriers out there, but I think it could be one of the big solutions for all of this. As more and more records are put on PDFs and available electronically, I think that will help this whole process. Final thing I wanted to say is I know there's going to be some court decisions and on this, but a big issue out there on public records is email, the issue of email, of using your personal email to do public business. And I think the intent of the law here should be that the public's business is done in public. And if you use your private email, that email should be public record. So, again, thank you for your time and effort on this.
Thanks for deciding to testify. Thanks. Appreciate it.
See, looks like we can go back a couple of rows. Would you like to go next? Not Christina, but you, yes. I know, it's
part of our
Ellen.
She's sitting in on our group.
Ellen is. Ellen's neighbor. How about you? Would you like to come forward? Okay. And you? Well,
we
are out of people who are here to testify.
Any of you want to change your mind?
Anyone want to ask questions? Do we want to take questions?
Yes, yeah, sure. No, absolutely. If you have any questions or thought of something you forgot to say, you're absolutely welcome to. I think we should point out that there was quite an outreach to get people to come today, and it is a small group. It may be in part due to the weather. It may be due to other things. One may be that we actually have representation on this task force that's a very broad representation, and people are aware of that, so that could possibly be a difference. I don't want to sound defensive, but we have tried very hard to reach out. We will continue to have public hearings. This is not going to be the only one. But we wanted to have the first one in Salem on a day when the legislature was here for Ledge Day. So we picked today for that. So we will continue to reach out and definitely move around the state into some other areas. So if you have a suggestion for a town. First one in Salem seems to be a good idea, but we certainly have other places in mind that we would like to offer to the public. And written testimony is also totally welcome.
Oh, yeah. I should read my written testimony.
Right. You have something. But I just wanted to say that in response to our first speaker, Ms. Hanson. So thank you for bringing that out.
So are you putting something into the next session, this coming session?
Oh, as far as the bill goes, no, we are not. We are looking toward the following session. However, it is my understanding that there may be a couple of bills that are being worked on, possibly one pertaining to the ombudsman, who somebody mentioned, the ombudsman role, which I think is going to be called something different than that, but the idea being someone from outside of DOJ and outside of the just formal statutory practices for reviewing public records requests. That may be in the hopper, and then there are some other possibilities, I think, but they wouldn't be coming out of this task force. They would be coming possibly from the governor's office. I don't know about this. I don't want to speak on behalf of the Secretary of State, but I know the Secretary of State's office has been very involved in terms of an audit that was recently released on some of these issues, in fact, recommending the ombudsman.
And if I could maybe add, the list of exemptions grows every legislative session.
Yeah.
So I'm aware of at least one. I'm sure there'll be a number of bills to pass that add to the list of exemptions.
Okay.
So.
Yep. Yeah. We may be working a little bit at cross purposes there, but that does happen.
I will live as a growing one.
I think it is flagged as in progress, even on our website, and there is actually another version that needs to be uploaded. Not too many more than the last one, which I've
found.
More than 500 now.
Is this official testimony?
I was asked by Angela Flood, who could not be here, if I could deliver her testimony for her, and since I could, I will. She wrote the following. My name is Angela Flood. The First Amendment states in part, Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. While I am presenting today, through Mr. Crone, I want you to think of those words and how they are being applied in this room. During testimony for House Bill 3505, Bill Johnstone, the Oregon Association of Broadcasters, stated media must often make business decisions about what they report based on the charges that will be incurred to get documents. Reporting may not occur at all due to delays. Elections may be influenced, as in the case of former Governor Kitzhaber, and the refusal to release documents when requested. Often, in order to provide information for redress of grievances with the government, citizens need documentation. Citizens must be allowed unshackled access to that information. It cannot be hindered by charges or delays. The practice of charging fees for documents is an antiquated abridgment of a free press and redress, and it needs to stop. I have been to so many of these transparency meetings, I have lost count. Always the same players, but never any forward movement. How many are here for the agenda of freeing up the information? Too many dollars are being spent on highly paid, tax-funded lobbyists, people who coach entities to testify they cannot afford to comply with requests for records. If officials want to restore trust, can they afford not to provide sunlight into the transactions being made on citizens' behalf? Too many officials who don't want information known or are ignorant of the true value of disclosure buy into the arguments. Lobbyists don't make money if they don't have a battle to fight, so they create one. For the right price or the right person, those documents become available. That is not trust building. The laws need to be brought into this century. If employees do not know how to work with the available technology, that should not be my problem. It is a job skill. Either they are qualified or they are not. My goal is to see all documents made available online and in real time. It doesn't have to be all documents at once. Pick a date and start there going forward. And if someone requests something, put it online. In lieu of that, all documents should be available free of charge. There is precedence for this in other states. Oregon continues to fail in transparency, and it is not acceptable. I promise you, despite the statements made by lobbyists and staff, no one is going to make thousands of requests at a time. Might people make requests that officials may be embarrassed to release? Quite possibly. But when the documents become hard to come by, citizens become suspicious and animosity is generated. In the private sector, if an employee delayed or charged their manager for information, they would be fired. Yet this seems to be completely acceptable by government towards citizens. There is actually more money going into preventing access to information than what it would cost them to just comply. The attorney fees, the software to build secret listserv databases, the additional security. Instead of spending dollars on fighting sunlight, government should be opening the doors and saying, come on in, we are open to do your business, and this is how we are conducting it. I pay for the computers, the people, the buildings, the technology, so why is the burden on me to prove why I shouldn't pay? Why is the burden not on the agency to make their case to the DA of why they should be allowed to charge? The current system is just not working. It is sleazy and unconstitutional. It needs to be put out of its misery so we can all get back to the business of the people. Quit grandstanding, pick a date, and start. Thank you for your time. Okay, Red. And I don't think anyone else has come in the last few minutes.
I wanted to give you a quick update. You and I had spoken earlier about the Republican Party on a statewide level has been very open and vocal about transparency, and you had emailed me and asked me to give messaging to that. The person who was supposed to be here and testify just emailed me and said their car broke down. So if there's a future, it will be delayed. So if there's future testimony, I'll also ask that person to please email you.
Okay, great.
So, just to give you a follow-up.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I know that you mentioned that you had been around the state and conducted meetings, I imagine, somewhat similar to this. So
yes.
I thought it might be useful for us to talk. Okay, do you want to hang out here?
I think we need to, yeah. Not everyone on the task force needs to remain. If you have other commitments, but we will stay until 6 o'clock because we have said that this is a meeting that goes from 4 to 6.
And I think there may be people.
I think we need to have at least a core group that does remain, but please don't feel that you need to if you have other commitments. Yes?
I wanted to follow up the gentleman that spoke about the time frame, small versus large, blah, blah, blah. If we're going to have institutions, I completely disagree. I think the time frame has to be made clear, and if we're going to have something called a city or a school district or whatever, they're just going to have to deal with the laws no matter how big or small they are. Making exemptions or special rules for this one or that one, it's not going to work. And also in my observation, the institutions or the cities or whatever that have the most to hide and that are the least well-run are the ones that will find the most ways to try to penalize the public for trying to get the information. So we just have to have universal rules, and we have to find ways to ensure there's consequences if all the places don't stick to them. That's my.
Thank you for that. Yeah, thank you.
I wasn't planning to talk this much. I want to.
No, let's just make sure that you identify yourself for the record because it's unclear to the record.
Ms. Hanson again.
Right, Ms. Hanson, thank you.
I'm Dan Gurney with the Freedom Foundation. I want to echo that. I do a lot of public records requests in the state of Washington, and just to give you an idea of what kind of the difference is, and I think there's value in looking at other states. When a person puts in a public records request, it is required that within 5 business days, the entity respond back saying, I got your record request. They have to do that within 5 days. Otherwise, if you don't get that, you think, oh, it got lost in the mail, or they didn't get it, or went to the spam box. And in that same email, or correspondence back, they have to tell you what their anticipated response time will be because they can be big and they can be small. Or sometimes I've done public records requests. In that same email, they provide the request. And the exemption rules follow what you just said, a universal code kind of a thing instead of this kind of mishap of exemptions and rules and this mire of, and then also as well, if it is shown that a record was not provided in a timely manner or that something was purposely withheld, there are sanctions. So there's other states that have some very vigorous and very robust that rules and guidelines that make it so that you get, public gets what they want and yet privacy is still respected.
So you've been happy with your experience with Washington?
I have, actually. It's refreshing.
Thank you.
And to add to that, I'm sorry, me again, Anne-Marie Gurney, and I will be quiet after this, I promise. With large public records requests, I had one public records request where about every 30 days the person would come back and say, okay, we're working on the next one, and we're still working on it. And so for the long ones, they'll drag it. The entity, the municipality can drag it out, but they have to keep you informed where it's at. So yes, I think there's a definitely good provision for those super large ones where there's going to be a lot of work involved. I don't mind waiting for it, but it's just nice to have that communication and being responsive to the public. And I promise I won't speak again.
No worries.
Thank you.
all very helpful follow-up.
Go ahead. Well, and I'm glad you, this is Robert Taylor, excuse me. I'm glad you brought up that distinction between large and complex requests and small routine requests, because that was something that our audit found and made a distinction on, that small routine discrete requests, we're pretty good at that in Oregon. We are. It's the larger, more complex requests that we struggle with, because I think those get into the, well, now we got to go pay staff to go find it all. Maybe we have to have lawyers review it, and it can take time to get those back to the public, and that's where people get frustrated. So that's where at least our audit identified a lot of the difficult areas. And I do think, to be fair to the smaller cities and small rural school districts, I'm from a small rural place and work, I have some sensitivity to that. They any and all documents related to this or that thing, and if you're operating on a shoestring budget already and are already struggling to provide the public service you want, that one request from that one person can distract you from your public service mission to every other member of the public in that city or in that school district. And that is a problem. And I think we have to do a good job of balancing that. So I am sensitive to that concern.
Jeff, you.
I don't really mean to testify. I don't think that's appropriate, but I think with people here, it's a little bit informal, small group. Thought it might be of interest from the newspaper world that I'm in. There's probably 10 or 20 areas that we consider of major concern, but here's four that are just sort of broad areas that we run across on a regular basis. Too many exemptions. I mean, I think we all know that. Too complex, too many special interests, just too many to deal with. And fortunately, that's kind of top priority for the task force to dive into, and I think that's a good thing. We find consistently that government in Oregon treats all of the laws exemptions as if they were mandatory, when in fact most of them are optional. And you just rarely anymore find anybody in government that acknowledges that exemptions are optional and that it's okay without consequence for them to reveal if they feel that it's all right. There's too much worry about liability, I think. Third area is that government in general often disregards the mandate to separate exempt from non-exempt material, and just simply outright denies records without even considering that requirement that it be separated between the exempt portion and the non-exempt portion, which doesn't even speak to the issue of whether or not they should charge for separating that exempt portion out when it's optional. I've always thought that when government spends a huge amount of legal time redacting optional exemptions, and maybe it ought to be on them, not on the public or whoever is requesting. And there's a difference. And then the fourth and last point of that small group is that nobody understands what the public interest is in this law, and it's stated 8 different ways, and it's interpreted 100 different ways, and ignored and misinterpreted and fought, and I don't know that there's an easy solution to that, but it's a key part of the Oregon law that is one of the most problematic things that we deal with in seeking public records. So, as a member of the task force, I'd welcome anybody's thoughts on any of those issues along the way as we continue this work.
Thanks, Jeff. You want to take those on? We could get a lot of work done today.
Right.
Oh, good list. Kind of like to hear what your other 6 are.
I'll briefly take on the in the public interest part of the
state your name, please.
Susan Hansen, rural Malala. I put that in because I use the information I get to inform the public about what's going on in my community or what the environmental violations are, this, that, and the other. I can prove that. I blog. I have endless letters to the editor helping people understand the issues in my area. And again, like you say, it's all over the map. You know, the little city I live near, they would never honor that, but I give DEQ credit. I've done a lot of work with them, and they will happily copy, notes of meetings and anything I request these days, and it's all without fee because they respect that our little environmental group is doing yeoman's work to improve what's going on in my community. So that is a big issue, that in the public interest definition. I really think you're on point on that one.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Anybody else want to comment or questions for any of us? Okay.
I feel like we need to keep anybody here. I think I'm going to say it sounds like you may too. And
well, since we drove together, I don't have much choice.
I'm going to hold the Attorney General hostage to an empty room.
I'm happy to stay.
Thank you, everybody who did show up. As the Attorney General mentioned, this will not be the only opportunity, and we will look at ways to improve turnout for sure.
Yeah, and if you have any lists or information you want to give us to that would help us reach out, feel free to provide that.
Okay, because I think you might consider, going to some of the counties, holding outreach. Inviting the little city governments and the big city governments and being a lot more vigorous about this. And, there's people I know I only found out about this 2 days ago. Thank you, Michael. And, there were a couple of people I would have liked to have been able to bring here today, but they just weren't available. But I think there's people interested, truly out there. It just needs to be, available to them. It's difficult for some of us to get to a place like this and I think you need to do regional or countywide outreach, let people say what they think, and that gives the cities a chance, to say what they want to say too. But thank you for your work.
Right. Thank you.
Keeping the pressure on.
Okay. We'll take a little break then, and there might be some people who are coming after work, so we want to make sure that's why we made it 4 to 6. We'll hang around for a little while and maybe they'll show up.
6 o'clock, I'll stay in.
All right. Oh, and there's cookies and stuff, so
we can just,
help yourself.
Have a little party.
Okay. Yeah, go get a couple of bottles of wine.
Yeah. We're on the record.